Welcome to the Women Who Fights podcast. We empower female fighters to take full agency over their training. Our goal is to celebrate and inspire others with the incredible action women and allies are taking to level the playing field. We talk to experts, uncover prejudice, and champion what's driving our progress.
And today we have Emma Thomas with us. Emma is a former Muay Thai fighter who's been living in Bangkok for 10 years. She's also the creator of UnderTheRopes.com, where she writes about her experiences as a woman in Muay Thai and gender inequality in the sport. Her article about being sexually assaulted by a trainer led her to become a public speaker and activist for the elimination of gender-based violence and rape culture. And this is what we want to dive on today. So Emma, thank you for being with us today. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks for having me. I think you covered a lot of it there already. But yeah, I'm from England. I moved to Bangkok in 2011, and originally it was for Muay Thai, but I never thought that I would become a fighter when I first started. I really had no athletic background, certainly no combat sports background, but I just wanted to try it. And then I thought, okay, I'll have my first fight. And yeah, 10 years later, I'm still here.
Did you go with the intention of staying or no?
Say that again.
Did you go with the intention of staying or did you go for just holidays?
So the very first time it was for traveling. I was backpacking when I first graduated from uni. But like a lot of people do, you fall in love with the place and you want to come back. So I decided I would come back and be an English teacher. And so I thought I was going to be here for a year or maybe two, but it wasn't that long term. And then eventually I got to the point where I was like, well, why would I go home? You know, my life is in Bangkok, right? Is in Bangkok now, and I love it here. It feels like home.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so I actually discovered you because I read about your weightlifting as well. So I want to talk about weightlifting later because that was a great and then I read more about you and I was like, oh my god, and she does Muay Thai. And you've had this whole journey through, because you say you didn't do much sport as a child, is that correct? I mean, you said you didn't come from an athletic background,
right? I mean, I kicked a football around with boys like in the park, but I wasn't like an athlete. No, not at all. I was always last in PE.
At least you did PE. but so you started Muay Thai. So when you were backpacking, was that how you found Muay Thai, or was that you found Bangkok and went, I want to be here, and then you sort of stumbled across Muay Thai later on?
You know, I can't pinpoint, you know, the first moment that I discovered Muay Thai. I can't remember if it was when I was in Thailand or beforehand, but I remember that I remember the first session that I tried it. You know, I was too shy to walk into a gym in the UK. I kind of felt like it was a bit intimidating, and you know, you have all of these ideas about what it might be like, and especially as a woman and a complete beginner. But somehow in Thailand, like, I didn't have any of those hang-ups. It was like, well, nobody knows me here, so I can just walk into this gym, and it doesn't matter if I embarrass myself or whatever. And yeah, just, you know, when you first start training and it just feels really powerful, I just fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And what were some of the challenges you have faced in your Muay Thai career?
So when I first started, and during the years that I was fighting, Muay Thai, well, women's Muay Thai certainly wasn't what it is now. Now you're seeing many more female fighters and many more women coming to train in Thailand, whether it's to fight or for fitness. It does seem as though it's more accessible to women than it once was. Although, as I'm sure we'll get into, it's certainly not an equal playing field. We certainly don't have gender equality. But during those years, I was almost always the only woman in the gym. It was very hard for me to find training partners. And in that sense, it was also hard for me to progress in training, you know, when you don't have the right people to spar with. Mm. There weren't so many opportunities for me to fight. I felt like I had to work for harder and longer to get the chance to fight. And then when I did, you know, sometimes I was paid half as much as the guys or paid nothing, you know, and I didn't do it for the money, but that's not the point, is it? And yeah, like in any sport or industry where I think women are othered or not fully welcomed, you're always going to experience some form of discrimination. And I did find a lot of difficulties with some of the men that I trained with in that sense.
Mm. And were you, were you always voicing issues that you had, or because there weren't many women and so it wasn't really such a safe environment in that sense, how did you deal with these difficulties?
I mean, I am a very non-confrontational person. I do not like conflict.
Right.
It's very difficult for me to challenge someone in person. And I'm very good in writing, which is why blogging was a really good outlet for me. Mm. So I first started my blog just to connect with other women in the sport because, you know, I wasn't seeing them in the gym. And that was how I kind of created a community and started to share our experiences together. And that was really empowering. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. And you were an expat. Oh, sorry. You were an expat in Thailand as well. So just in terms of your, before we dive into being a woman there as well, just being an expat there and doing something which is probably quite different to your journey, did you doubt your decision, or not decision, but did you ever feel like, what am I doing? Because it's such an amazing thing to do, but it's also like a lot of people kind of dream, oh, wouldn't that be amazing? But you never quite make that happen.
Constantly. Yeah, I've often felt like that. When you're an expat, you're, most of the people around you are on a temporary lifestyle, you know. People come and go and you find like you make really good, strong friendships and then those people leave after a year or two. Mm. And that was often quite difficult and you go through periods of loneliness. And I think in a sport like Muay Thai, it's a very lonely sport anyway, you know, regardless of your gender. And I think that played into it as well. I certainly had moments where I was like, what am I doing? You know, because I was never the kind of fighter who was going to be a champion. Like, I fought because I loved it. I won and I lost. And I had people telling me, like, you should probably quit. Like, I did have that. I had a trainer and some a boyfriend or two back in the day telling me, you know, you're not that good. You should probably quit. And that was something that I wrote about. But also when speaking to my family, I often had self-doubt because they just did not understand what I was doing. I mean, my background was very academic. I was the first person in my family to go to university and I was expected to graduate and become an engineer and all of those things. And I was like, well, I'm off to Thailand to fight. And they were like, what?
Rough.
Yeah, so especially the older people in my family, you know, when I would visit home, they'd kind of compare me to other cousins or whatever and be like, when are you going to come home and, you know, have a real life and, you know, get a husband in a house and all of those kind of things, which is fair enough, but I don't want any of those things, or at least not right now. But it didn't stop me from having those feelings of doubt where I'm like, oh, I see all of my friends going off and doing all of these other things and maybe I should be doing that. But I'm in a place now where I feel like things have fallen into place for me. I'm in the right place in my life. Yeah.
But how do you?
I can only imagine that.
With all of this negativity around you, so people throwing, you know, little comments like that, how did you get yourself back on track? If I make any sense.
Yeah, I think for me it was always when I had those times when I went home, and those were the worst times where I had those feelings because, you know, I was put in that different environment and surrounded by those people who, you know, didn't understand what I was doing. Every time I came back to Thailand, just got back into the gym, back in my routine, like I was on it, I was fine, I knew where I was meant to be. But at home, it's almost like living a double life. Because when I go home, nobody wants to talk about what I'm doing in Thailand. And I don't want to be the person who's always like, well, in Thailand, you know, because that's annoying. And my friends at home never even asked me about what I was doing. It was just so alien to them. So it was like we just didn't talk about it, you know. Mm. Very strange.
Yeah.
And sometimes with my parents, even if I'd won fights, I would still receive negative comments. One time there was a fight where I won by knockout in the first round, and my dad said, "Well, your opponent can't have been very good then."
Ooh.
And another one where I sent my mum a video of my fight, and I won by knockout in the second round, and she goes, "Well, I don't think you were winning before that." So that's the kind of thing. I mean, they're very typically British negative people. So right. I always felt like separating myself from that, as much as I love my family, was good for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, fair enough. It does feel like it, just like coming back as well and trying to explain to people what your life. I think we've all had this to some degree, you know, like for people, me and Marina train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I know that there are people in my life who now have accepted it 6 years later, but at the beginning we're like, why won't you come out on the weekend? And I'm like, because I'm training and I'm knackered. And they just be like, but I don't understand. I mean, this is a very small version of what it is, but it's that sense of not understanding your passion for something and how important it is to you. And it's not about your wins, or it's about the process and your experience of it.
I had an aunt maybe the last time I went home or the year before, and she literally asked me, "Do you ever win?" And I just didn't know what to say. I was like, "Well, yeah, I mean, I have. Otherwise, I wouldn't keep doing it. But actually, that's not the reason that I do it, you know?"
Yeah.
Or, you get people asking you, "What do you do for fun?" And you're like, "Well, this is what I do for fun." You know?
Yeah.
They don't get it.
But so Muay Thai must have basically, for you to love it so much, you're clearly getting a lot out of it. Can you talk us through what you're getting? What is it giving you?
Well, I spoke a bit about, you know, feeling powerful when you're learning, I think learning any combat sport and learning to punch and kick gives you that feeling. But for me, I also mentioned not being very non-confrontational, and it really was integral for me for building confidence. And I think that's a very common thread that you get a lot of women saying when they do these kind of sports. But confidence building was really the main thing. And it's something I'm still working on. And I think I'll always be working on, because that's just who I am. But I think that's the main thing for me.
But Emma, the Muay Thai is quite very physical. And, you know, there's punches, there's kicks, there's elbows, and you do it, you spar, is that right? You're not only trail, but you also spar. So what do you do in the days when your body's like, "I need a break, love"? What do you, do you still go? Do you, when you're PMSing, how's, and also, bracket, if you're fighting and you're not on the perfect time of your cycle, but talk to us about that as well.
So I stopped fighting 3 or 4 years ago. It wasn't really a conscious decision. It kind of just faded out of my life a bit, and priorities changed, and I still train, but I don't think that I'll fight again. But certainly when I was fighting, nothing really stopped me from training. I sometimes would fight and then go to the gym the next day if I was totally fine. And I think sometimes in any sport, you can kind of use training as a way of almost like punishing yourself for something. Like, I don't know, you that's that feeling of like just pushing yourself that's somehow kind of addictive. And I think that was part of it. You talked about your menstrual cycles and training, and I think I've definitely felt the ups and downs of that. I always used to just push through it. Now that I'm not training, not fighting anymore, if there is a day that I really don't want to go, I just don't go. And that is just a tiny thing, but it feels so different and so empowering to me, because it's like, oh, I train because I love it, and only because I love it. I don't feel any of these outside pressures anymore. I think I have a healthier relationship with it now.
Do you think that if you, theoretically, if you started to fight again, do you think that you would be able to continue with that attitude of like being not, because you mentioned outside pressures, or do you think that just comes with the territory?
I think to some extent it comes with the territory. I think even to be a fighter, you have to have this kind of personality where you just keep going, you know. I have quite an addictive personality that I'm either all in or nothing. I don't do anything by halves, and that goes for eating and everything. And I think that is also, I mean, I'm sure we'll get on to lifting, but that's part of the reason why I'm enjoying lifting more now, because I can actually enjoy eating in a way that I couldn't before.
Yeah.
You know, so it just feels like now my life has room for more things than it used to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay. And
go on, Nina Vicente.
No, your turn.
could we go into the perception of women training Muay Thai in Thailand, and how are they perceived, and what's the relationship between, you know, men training, women training?
I think since I started, things have definitely started to shift. As I mentioned, the sport is definitely more accessible to women than it used to be.
Mm.
And I know there are some women who train in Thailand who read some of the things I say and say, well, I've never experienced that. You know, I've never felt discriminated against in some way. It's not many, but you do always get those perspectives, and I respect that. But at the end of the day, there are still stadiums that women can't fight in. Historically, the most famous Muay Thai stadium in Thailand, Lumpini Stadium, it never allowed women to fight. And they just started in the last few months. Now they've started having women fight there, which is a huge shift.
Right.
And, you know, women have to enter the ring by going under the bottom rope, whereas men go over the top rope, which is, of course, where the name of my blog came from. And years ago, you'd see some gyms, they would have a separate ring for women, or, you know, women wouldn't get some of the same treatment. I think it depends where you go, and that is why women have to be much pickier about the gyms that we train in, and I think that goes for everywhere, not just Thailand. I mean, I'm sure you might experience some of these things in jiu-jitsu, even in the UK.
Sorry, what's the relationship of the instructor? Is it like as there's one, you know, there was one instructor that you know it's your master?
Okay, sometimes yeah, it's like that. You might have like a head instructor, in a gym. I mean, often it's like that. You might have lots of different instructors, but there'll be one head instructor. Or if you're in a gym with lots of different trainers, quite often you'll somehow get like inadvertently assigned to one trainer. Like one trainer will take you under their wing, and then you're suddenly like, you're their fighter.
Right.
I had an experience like that in a gym where I was working with this one trainer. He was always working with me for my fights. We were, you know, I was always doing pads with him, clinching with him. And I had a fight coming up, and this other trainer had come in. But the trainer I'd been working with had just kind of stopped caring. Like, he wasn't giving me the work anymore. And this new guy came in and really wanted to teach me. And he was taking the time out after training to give me, you know, extra attention. And of course I would work with him because I was grateful for the opportunity. And the day before my fight, I was in the gym in my sauna suit, just shadow boxing and preparing for the weigh-in. And this new trainer was like, oh, are you fighting tomorrow? When's your weigh-in? And the other trainer hadn't even asked me about it. And he said, oh, I'll take you to the weigh-in. And I was like, okay, cool, great. And then on the night, nobody showed up to corner me. That first trainer felt so slighted that he didn't show up to my fight. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So you were not cornered?
I mean,
you fought without
a corner. My boyfriend at the time happened to be a fighter, and he cornered me, so it was okay. But it was a very like stressful experience for me. I ended up leaving that gym after that.
Yeah. How could you not show up for your like just out of like just you can't let them not have someone? How could you not just show up for that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like it's I don't know, that's like, it's like a proper, you know, it's a ring fight with loads of audience. I think in a jiu-jitsu competition, you do want your coach there to corner you, but it's a bit different. And if it's like a, you know, an open competition, do you know what I mean? It's like you need a corner. That's outrageous.
Yeah, no, I was really, really upset. I didn't go back to the gym for a while. I spent some time crying about it. I wrote a blog post about it, as I do. And when I did go back, he did say, "I'm sorry, I thought you didn't need me." You know, he kind of felt resentful, like, "Oh, she doesn't need me. She's got that guy." And I was like, "Yeah, all right," but I didn't go back.
Right. Yeah. And so you're a writer because you've got your blog, your successful blog Under the Ropes, and that you sort of mentioned how you started that, but can you go a bit more into it? It was sort of came a place where you created a community, and then now it's evolved as well. Can you talk about what it's, because you now do more. So can you talk us through that?
Well, I can't have really predicted where it would take me. I mean, I started just writing for myself. I just wanted to document my experiences as a woman in Muay Thai. And I thought there have got to be other women who can benefit from this. So that's how it started. At first, it was just me writing about my fights, my experiences in the gym, you know, things that I wasn't reading about in other places, like how sometimes I would randomly cry in sparring for no reason. And why does that happen? And, you know, things like that. And sharing resources for women and things that I thought would be helpful for other women who wanted to do what I was doing. And that gave me some really great connections that evolved into some really meaningful friendships that I still have today. But later, as the years went by, I started writing about things like not only my own experiences, but things I was seeing, like gender inequality, rape culture, and not only in Muay Thai, but other issues in Thai society. And it grew from there. One article that I'd written, it was called Rape Culture in Thailand. And it stemmed from, I used to be an English teacher while I was fighting, and it stemmed from a class that I was teaching. I was teaching adults, and one of the guys in my class made a joke in Thai that he thought I wouldn't understand to someone else and said, "If Emma doesn't pass me for this class, I will rape her." And so I wrote this massive long article about how this kind of language and jokes are kind of normalized, and how in Thai soap operas, you see a lot of rape scenes. But it's not the kind of scenes that you would expect. A lot of these scenes, it's not shown as a crime or violence. It's shown as like, maybe the good girl doesn't want to show that she likes the guy because she's a good girl and she has to be innocent, and the guy has to kind of force her, and then they fall in love and they get married.
Right.
And that sounds outrageous, but there are lots of those scenes, and there have been lots of Thai people speaking up against this as well. But I wrote this one article about it, and again, it was for my own blog, and somehow it went viral. I had no idea. I went into work one day and someone said, "Emma, they're talking about your article on the radio, on a Thai radio station."
Yeah.
It was huge. And from there, I started writing about more things like that. Later, somehow, my blog also led me into activism. I started doing some public speaking about rape culture and gender inequality. And then after that, it also led me into a career, because I was contacted by Decathlon Thailand, because they were launching their own Muay Thai brand. And somehow they found my work and my website, and they said, "We want you to work for us and develop this brand." And it kind of fell into place, and I feel like it's a really perfect job for me because it gives me the time to train, and it's something that I love. And yeah, honestly, if I hadn't started that blog, I don't know what I'd be doing now.
Wow. So what, Decathlon rang you up and were like, "Come," what did they want you to do for them? Was it more activism? Was it more sort of...
No, it was quite strange, because they, the CEO sent me a message on LinkedIn, and we met up for dinner, and he was like, "Right, we're launching this brand. You tell us what you can contribute, what you want to do." And I was like, okay, I've never had an offer like this before. And at first I was like, well, I can kind of be a consultant for you. I can tell you how to develop the products and, you know, what people need and stuff like that. And originally it was kind of on a freelance basis, but eventually they came back to me and said, we want you full time. And they hired me as like a marketing manager. So what I do for them now is I'm like a communication leader in that I put on events, I connect them to gyms and fighters, and I sponsor some like amateur fight nights in Bangkok with the brand, and content creation and all that kind of stuff. I think it's really perfect for me.
Yeah, it sounds like you followed your nose a bit. I mean, it sounds like you've done that a lot in your life, and that's amazing. I think a lot of people don't, and really I think that that's generally how you discover like interesting and new avenues to live your life, different ways to live your life. But yeah, it sounds perfect, and it fits so well into your lifestyle.
Yeah. I don't want to say it's a fluke, because, you know, I think everything's happened along the way for a reason, but I do feel lucky. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have any pushback? Any kind of pushback to your work from people that are like, what's this woman want?
generally, no. I mean, you do get guys on the internet who have something to say. Mm. You know, they're always there. Mm. You get those kind of comments. But I will say, generally, the people who follow me are pretty decent. I haven't got too much trolling or anything like that. Maybe the most pushback I've had is from my family.
Oh my god!
But that's just about me doing the sport in general. Yeah.
Do you think that's also because they're like, come home? Sorry.
Yeah.
They want you to come home. They're like, please come home. We miss you.
Yeah, I mean, especially when COVID started, and they were like, so you're gonna come home, right? And I was like, no, absolutely not.
What did you do during lockdown?
I am not a home training person. No. I need the gym.
I'm very much a creature of habit. I don't think many people are.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest. Like, I am a creature of habit. I need my routine, and if I get thrown out of that, things start to go wrong.
Yeah.
And I kind of, I very much took it as I'm taking a break from life. I may only get this one chance. So yeah. I mean, we had two lockdowns here. And in the first one, I was quite productive. I was doing a bit of training. I started taking some extra Thai classes online. And then in the most recent one, I think it was last maybe October to January. Oh, I did absolutely nothing but eat and watch Netflix.
Fair enough. I do think that COVID, for some people, it was, you know, that there, it's been awful for a lot of people, but for some people, it has really been an opportunity to literally just kind of recalibrate and tone it down and reconnect, just really relax. And I think so often, especially if you're chasing something you love, and sometimes even if you're not, even if you're just in a demanding job, you really don't have like wind down, like being able to wind down and having time where it's really, you don't have to think about, there's so many things that you're not actually thinking about anymore. Because we're always thinking, even on the weekend, you know, you're working or you're sort of thinking about everything. And when you can really bring it back down to like ground zero, it's just, it's so restorative. It's probably going to set you up for like the next couple of years.
I hope so. Yeah. But that's how I felt. Yeah, I was like, I really just need this break. Yeah.
And you created an article about how to be an ally. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I just posted it today. Is an article called How to Be an Ally to Women in Muay Thai. And it was prompted by an article by I think quite a well-meaning man who he posted about how there isn't that much sexism in Muay Thai, and how I think he'd had one man say something to him like, women shouldn't train with men. And he was so shocked by this that he was like, "That people can't really think like that. I'm going to do an Instagram survey. Do you think that women are a distraction to men in the gym? Yes or no?" And then when obviously nobody said yes, because who's going to admit to that? He did a little video, as I said, very well-meaning, saying, "Don't worry, guys. It's just this one guy.
#No one voted. No one voted yet.
All men.
I mean, he didn't say that, but that is basically what he said.
Yeah.
So I wrote an article. It began as kind of a response piece to that. And then I was like, well, I want to make this more productive. I don't want it to just be like a scathing response. I don't want to discourage this man who I think is actually trying to be supportive to women. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I think some people just don't know how they can actually support us. And they don't know that we need the support. Yeah. So I wrote this article with some guidelines for just men who are training in the gym, how they can be more welcoming and empathetic to women, but also for gym owners and trainers, how they can create more inclusive, welcoming cultures in their gym, and how they can reduce the risk of abuse happening in their gyms, but also, because there's never zero risk, how they can actually respond in the correct way if it does happen. So I hope that it gets a good response.
That sounds like a really fantastic thing to do, because so often it's people want to help and do the right thing, but really it's sometimes you actually need to be told, like, because so much of our behavior is conditioned by our culture. Sometimes it's hard to see which bits are okay and which bits need addressing. And I think having an article like yours is probably, for some people, it'll be exactly what they need.
I hope so. I didn't want to word it as, you know, an attack, and I hope that some guys will be receptive to it. Yeah, sure.
So I'd love to talk about your powerlifting.
Okay.
Because I love how many women powerlift, because it's so stereotypically a male thing. Like, yes. Fighting is as well, but being strong and having that is, anyway, so it's really cool. Can you talk to us about how you started?
Yeah, so I kind of fell into powerlifting. It wasn't something that I was looking for. I had never heard of it. I did not know what powerlifting is. But I was kind of coming to the tail end of my fighting career. Not that I really knew that it was that at the time. And I was looking for a new challenge. You know, when you've been training in one sport for many years and sometimes you just need something else, especially the nature of Muay Thai training is it's very repetitive. And I saw that a strength and conditioning gym had opened up near me and I was like, right, I want to try that. And they just happened to have powerlifting classes. Didn't know what that was, but I wanted to get stronger. So I joined that. And I had a coach who encouraged me to take part in a competition a few months later. And I just thought, yeah, I'll try it. Why not? And yeah, like Muay Thai, I kind of just fell in love with it. So yeah, I'm still at it now.
What is it about it that you love?
I think lifting heavy, it kind of gives you this feeling of being invincible for a moment. I know that's cheesy, but you know, when you're deadlifting heavy or whatever, just that's how it feels. Like, just feeling strong as hell is just such a good feeling.
Yeah. No, I get that. I understand that. Like,
also with Muay Thai, it's like Muay Thai is a sport that you are constantly trying to shrink yourself. You've always got to make weight. You want to fight at a lower weight class, be more competitive, whatever. And especially in Thailand, people are telling you need to lose weight all the time, regardless of your size. And lifting was the first time that I was encouraged to get bigger. And, you know, I was learning to take up space. And one thing I didn't mention is that that time when I was coming into powerlifting, I kind of really needed it because I was coming out of a really bad breakup. I'd been in a relationship for 5 years with this other fighter, and it was really, really toxic. And when I came out of it, I was just really in need of rebuilding my confidence and my identity in some way. And I think lifting really, really helped me in that way.
Wow. Did you have to go, of course you had to go through the process of the beginner again, but did it feel weird to your body to have to put so much strain on your back, let's say?
I mean, yeah, just adapting to those different movements was really difficult. For a long time, I couldn't actually squat all the way down. I don't know if it's just my body or the effects of Muay Thai or whatever, but I really have quite poor mobility. It's something that I have to work on. So you know, even for someone who was fighting professionally for 5 years, I was rubbish at push-ups, you know, but mm-hmm. having to really focus on those strength aspects, it was a real challenge. But yeah, I loved it. But I will say that going from that to Muay Thai, it's very hard to balance the two, because on a day when you've been lifting heavy and then your legs are so sore and then someone's kicking your leg or you can't lift your leg up to block, it's very difficult. But I wouldn't give up either of them at this stage.
Oh, you're doing both?
Yeah, I'm still training both, trying
how?
To juggle it.
How often do you do what?
There are days where I might go to Muay Thai in the morning and then strength in the evening.
There
are some days where I'll go to Muay Thai at 3 p.m., get out at 5, come home, take a shower, eat a quick snack, go to strength at 7. I can't do that every day, especially not with my job, but I try my best. But like I said, I listen to my body on the days that it's like, no, not today. It's hard to balance the two of them. And I think if I was fighting, it would be impossible. But I love the both of them too much at this stage.
Are there many women in there in powerlifting classes?
Yes. I mean, I've only ever done it in Thailand, but there's a lot of Thai women powerlifting. There's a lot of Thai girls who weigh like 45 kilos and they're deadlifting like more than 100 kilos. Like they can lift more than I can lift. Like it's
Oh my God, their bone density must be like completely come back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not into Olympic weightlifting, but
can you tell us what the difference is between powerlifting and Olympic lifting?
Yeah, I mean, I should have mentioned that because, as I said, I had no idea when I first started. So powerlifting is just three lifts. It's squat, deadlift, bench press. Whereas Olympic weightlifting is kind of overhead stuff like snatch and clean and jerk, that kind of thing, which is more technical and requires more mobility, and which is why I don't like it. But Thai women do very well in Olympic weightlifting. They've historically won a lot of medals. Yeah, surprisingly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I want to try it. They do it at my gym. And I'm like, you're inspiring me to go and try a new sport.
Give it a go. You might love it.
Wow. So I really loved what you were saying about how you're suddenly encouraged to be bigger and like take up more space, because I feel like I totally that resonates with me quite a lot, because as a woman, the idea of being smaller and fitting into your environments rather than having to always adapt to your space and all of that, I think actually taking up space and sort of being, cheesy as it sounds, like unapologetic and being like, I am now here, I am here, this is me and this is my space. And I think mentally, did that have like a real impact on your mentally taking up space as well?
Yes, definitely. Even there were friends who I hadn't seen for a few months who I met up with, you know, for lunch or whatever after lifting for a while, and they were like, you're different. You carry yourself differently. You walk differently. And and I could feel that too. It's done a lot for me, I would say. It's interesting because, you know, when I first started Muay Thai, I was talking about how I feel so much more confident. But I think lifting took it to another level.
It's so fascinating. Because you think with Muay Thai or martial art, like, because there's so much forward energy, you'd think, you'd get used to being in someone's face. But really, it's less about that and it's more about, because that's something that I've done a little bit of kickboxing and I'm just like, I find it very hard to hit someone in the face because I'm like, oh, sorry. You know, it's very,
oh my God. The amount of women who you're sparring with and they'll hit you and go, sorry. And I mean, I've been very guilty of that, but it's like, you don't hear men apologizing to each other when they're sparring, you know?
Yeah, no, you don't.
But no, I don't think that I could handle a confrontation in the street or something. You know, I still think I'd be very bad at that, but I'm just not a very assertive person. I'm quite observant. I always need a moment. But I think lifting, it taught me to take up space. And as I mentioned, I had for the first time in my life, my coach telling me, go home and eat, make sure you eat a lot after this session, because it was always, as I mentioned, sweating it out in a sauna suit or someone grabbing some of your skin and saying, you need to lose that kind of thing. It feels really good to not have to worry about my weight anymore. I mean, I'm not kidding myself. I do still think about it. You know, I'm still a woman living in the world. And, you know, we are in the middle of a pandemic, but I don't check my weight every day like I used to. And I think like many women, I have a history of disordered eating as well. So it helps me to not have to be quite so restrictive all the time.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think lifting really good for that.
Did you find yourself restricting, did you find yourself having to think about every single thing you're going to eat when you were into competing in Muay Thai?
Yes. And I mean, I was always a very naturally small person before. And, you know, I'm 33 now, so things are changing. But I always had to worry about what I was going to eat. But I think like a lot of women, every time I would go on holiday or take a week off or whatever it was, you would always be thinking, oh, how much weight have I gained? And you're punishing yourself for it afterwards. And every occasion that was coming up, there was always something I had to lose weight for, whether it was for a fight or to fit into something, or you know,
right.
You're always kind of, oh well, I'll be able to enjoy it when I hit this weight or when I can fit into that thing, which is stupid because you're never gonna be satisfied.
Yeah.
But I was still very much in that mindset when I was fighting, because of course I'm have to stay within my weight class.
It's such a weight. I think that's the thing about martial arts, is that it's all weight. All of them, to varying degrees, are weight.
Weight. I mean, really I still have to compete in a weight class for powerlifting. I haven't competed since before the pandemic, but I don't worry about my weight class anymore. I'm like, well, my weight is my weight. I'm competing at a higher weight than I was when I was fighting, obviously. But I'm like, oh my god, I need to get back to that size. Like, I've just let it go now. I feel like I have a healthier outlook.
Sometimes there's an obsession of, you know, this is my number and I'm not going out.
Yes.
Like, especially in jiu-jitsu, you're like, this is but why can you not go out if you're heavy?
Yeah.
I do get that with striking sports, the reach and the how tall you are plays a factor in which category you're gonna choose, but in our sport, Shanti, there's literally the weight class doesn't really mean anything. You can go up and down.
Yeah, you know? I think it's because I feel like it's very psychological, and I think that people get. I think I'm wondering now if when I next compete, it will have to be, I think I might end up going up a weight class, like if it was in the gi, just because I'm not prepared to cut weight. I'm not a professional athlete. Like, it's not something that like I don't need to fine tune those details. But for me, it's like, I do wonder if I will have to do it, because we all change naturally. We do change weight over time. And we spoke to a judo athlete, and she has been she's fought at the same weight category that she was fighting in since she was like a teenager.
Wow.
Because that was the weight she was taught to fight at. And now to change that, she would have to, it is a different game. And I think that a lot of really professional, I mean, maybe this is not completely correct, but this is what it appears to be. It's like you learn how to fight in a weight class, and then you stick to that because that's where your knowledge base is. And to actually step up again, maybe if you could learn, it would get better. But I think there's that jump you have to make where you're like, and also it's massive body acceptance. I think, as you said, Emma, it's like we're all punishing our, you know, women tend to punish themselves. You know, weight is, for most women, definitely enters my mind. However much I think that it doesn't, it definitely does.
What you said about fitting in, it's so bang on, because for decades, like even personal experience, I have always been thinking, oh, I need to fit into that dress. Why don't you buy a new one? Why don't you buy a bigger one? Sort it.
Stop buying that size.
Oh my God.
But like, you hear people as well. I mean, okay, I used to do this. I don't do this anymore. But I used to, you know, you buy something that you just fit into.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. You're like, I will fit into this. I don't fit into it now, but I will.
the top, it doesn't quite do up, but I'm nearly there. And yeah. I did this when I was like 16, and it was like, well, you're not going to get smaller. You're still getting bigger.
It's ridiculous, yeah.
But I mean, and you
were talking about going up weight classes and things. And in Thailand, most of my fights, there wasn't a weigh-in for. There's quite an informal fight scene, and a lot of times you don't have to check weight. And so it shouldn't have even been an issue. And most of my fights, I fought people who were heavier than me anyway. But I was still obsessing. Wow. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, well, most of the time, it wasn't like huge disparities, only in a couple of fights. But, you know, I know women who are always fighting up. But yeah, it's not, I don't know, like you said, it's kind of psychological. You get really attached to that number. I think even if you're not a weight class athlete, but just as a woman who's used to seeing that number on a scale, you get very attached to it. And I've stopped weighing myself now. I mean, I will obviously when I start to compete again, but for the moment I'm like, why would I even check my weight?
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with Jessica Fosterque. She's a British comedian and a strong woman athlete. She's a writer, very funny. And she had a comedy show called Hench, where the poster for it was her, it was her like deadlifting. And I was like, I want to see whatever that comedy show is. But obviously I wasn't so I couldn't see it. But I was listening to a Radio 4 show she'd done. And she was talking about not weighing herself. And I have to credit her with this because it was so bang on for me. And she said, I don't weigh myself. And I'd love to say that it's because I'm such a great feminist and I know that my weight does not equal my worth and all of that. But the real reason is it would make me a bit sad. And I was like, yes, that's it.
That is bang on.
Why would I want to do that to myself?
Yeah, for me, it's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
Exactly. If I don't know it, then, you know. But something I find interesting that happens is that I'll say to someone, oh, I'm a size 10, 12. Like that's sort of where I naturally sit. And I'll say this to people, I'll be like, oh, I'm about a size 12. You know, and sometimes I wear a size 14. It just depends on the cut is, doesn't it? Yeah. And they're always like, no, you're not that big. And I'm like, where is this perception coming from? That's just the size that, like, and it infuriates me because it's like, why are you denying something which is A, not that important, and B, it's just what it is. It's like, I can show you my trousers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like,
and why does it matter?
And I think that happens.
Then
people get stuck on, oh, I'm a size 12, and so they'll always try and get into like a size 12 or smaller. But it's like, well, actually, clothes aren't true to that anyway. So it's also then that you're actually trying to fit into stuff where it's like, I've got some clothes which are size 8. They're definitely oversized. Do you know what I mean? Like all of these sizings as well, like perpetuate this concept that it's like, and you feel worse about yourself if you stop fitting into your things because you've gotten older and your body has changed. And it's like, well, actually, no, like I've had a baby now. So maybe the thing that fit me 5 years ago won't fit me now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm someone who whose weight fluctuates a lot. Like my weight is always going up and down, partly because I think of just maybe my genetics and who I am, but partly also because I love to train, but I also love to eat. So, and like I said, I'm an all or nothing person. So if I'm not training, I am like, well, it's time to eat everything that I want to eat then. Because I know it's not good, but also who cares? my weight fluctuates a lot and I keep many different sizes in my wardrobe and whatever fits me on that day is whatever.
Well, that's perfect. That's what you should do. You should have variations because our body's also seasonally. Yeah. I mean, in the winter, I pack on a few more, inches. I need it.
Yeah, like I said, like when you're getting into your 30s and your body's like, time to make a baby, you got to hold on to all of this weight. That's just how it goes, and I'm at peace with it now.
Yeah,
most of the time, if I'm honest.
Most of the time, I think that's pretty spot on. Most of the time, you've done some. Do you want to tell us a little bit before we end? Do you want to tell us a little bit about any exciting projects? Because we read that you trained some Thai police. Have you got any interesting things that you've done like that?
So as I mentioned, when I started to write blog articles about my own experience of being sexually assaulted by a trainer in Thailand and also rape culture in general, people started reaching out to me to talk about it on a wider scale. One of those people was the vice consul of the British Embassy, and he is working to improve the way that Thai police serve survivors of rape and sexual assault in Thailand. So he invited me to the British Embassy to talk about it. He actually offered me a job, which I declined. But he also invited me to this conference that he was doing. It was called a Rape and Sexual Assault Survivor Handling Conference for Thai police. And he invited the, I think, founder of the Glasgow Clyde Rape Crisis Centre to hold the conference. And everyone listened to it with live translation to Thai. And she talked about things like the way trauma affects the brain, why people don't report, how you can talk to and question survivors in an empathetic way. And it was brilliant. And as part of that, I got up and I told my story and why I didn't report and what I might have needed at that time. And that was great. And another public speaking event I did was with UN Women. It was a university tour where we went around several different universities in Bangkok and we talked about gender inequality. And there was me and I think four other survivor activists who talked about their own experiences with domestic and sexual violence. And after we told our stories, we held panel discussions with some people, some officials and some students at the university. And then we took the students without any lecturers, no university officials were allowed in the rooms. And we held workshops with them to talk about their own experiences and brainstorm solutions that they'd like to see. And then we submitted those solutions to the universities. Whether or not they took them on board, we'll see. And then I also was a speaker at this event called Dragonfly, which was Southeast Asia's very first gender equality summit. So I spoke there again about my experience as a woman in Muay Thai with sexual assault and how when you have any sport or any industry where women are discriminated against or othered, that it becomes rife for this kind of abuse. So I did a lot of public speaking, and I've also put on some workshops and events for women in Bangkok. And part of that is I really wanted to make Muay Thai and also powerlifting more accessible to women, because, you know, you get a lot of women who say, well, I'd love to do that, but I don't want to step in the gym or something like that. So I held a few women's powerlifting workshops with the Thai Powerlifting Federation, and I had Thai female athletes teach it. And then the proceeds from that went to a foundation that helps women who are escaping abusive relationships. And then I also, in the same way, did Muay Thai workshops, fundraising in the same way. Mm. And last year I did another Muay Thai workshop, but it was in collaboration with a survivor support group, survivors of gender-based violence in Bangkok. And it was me, a counsellor, and a lawyer who provides pro bono legal services for survivors, and then all of these survivors who wanted to join. And we held a Muay Thai workshop for them, again, taught by a woman. And it was very important to me that it was not based around the idea of self-defense, because I'm very against the idea that self-defense should be marketed as a preventative tool for rape and sexual assault. That really angers me. And that's another thing that I've written about. So for me, I think that the real value of martial arts training for these women is women who've experienced trauma can find it very healing to train in combat sports. And it can be a way of reconnecting with your body and feeling confident and powerful again. And that was the real aim for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And since COVID happened, you know, I haven't been doing any of that stuff, but I'd really like to start again.
Mm-hmm. Well, COVID sort of, everything's,
yeah,
you know, down a little bit.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you're really at the start of a lot of these movements going on in Thailand. Like, you know, you say it's the first summit, or it's really early days. So you're really at the beginning.
I hope so. I mean, there are a lot of Thai feminists. I mean, you do get especially like expat boomer men in Bangkok who say things like, oh, it's these Western women bringing their feminism to Thailand and you don't need it. We don't need it here and blah, blah, blah. No, there are lots of Thai feminist women. I've written about them, you know. Feminism is not like this Western concept. Mm-hmm. But I'm very, very glad to work with some of those women and to be part of these movements. Yeah, I hope there's more I can do.
Yeah, I'm sure. Marina, do you want to ask our last question?
Yes. So we ask this question every guest that comes on our podcast, and it could be general. Your answer could be general or very specific, up to you. So, Emma Thomas, what are you fighting for?
I think that in a personal sense, I'll always be fighting to prove myself, whether that's just to myself to prove that I can do it, or, you know, to my family or to people around me. But in a more broader sense, I would say that I'm fighting to make Muay Thai and strength sports more accessible to women and girls. Yeah, that's my goal.
Amazing. Amazing. Can't wait to see what else you're going to be doing in the next
Thank
5 years. Very exciting. Thank you so much for giving us your, I don't even know what time of day it is at the moment, your evening, I think.
Yes, late here. But no, thank you for having me.
Thanks for giving us your evening. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Women Who Fight podcast. And credit to Will Grant for being our songwriter and sound editor. Please subscribe and share and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at womenwhofight.co.uk and check out our website for more content.